Welcome back, sports fans. On this episode of The Checkdown, we talk about the NBA Conference Finals, Pac-12 softball and baseball, and the Blitz package heats up as we talk about Twitter burner accounts, our predictions for the upcoming Pac-12 football season, breakfast burritos, and in honor of the Scripps National Spelling Bee, Kyle tries to spell the championship words from the last 5 years. Spoiler alert, he doesn't do so W-E-L-L, if you know what I mean. But first, Kyle's oldest son turned 3 today, and the jam of the week is one of his favorite songs, so here it is. This is Imagine Dragons with Thunder. Happy birthday, Cade. Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder. Thunder, thunder, thunder. Kyle, that was Imagine Dragons, and today is actually your oldest child's 3rd birthday, and I know he loves Imagine Dragons.
He loves Imagine Dragons. That's all my fault. By the way, that's just when we got the new soundbar at the house, and it's played a whole bunch of YouTube videos. So I want to see how it sounded, and then I did it so much that he started just naming songs.
Yeah,
and he'd say, "I want to hear this. I want to hear that," and that was number one. So.
I remember I was at your house one time, and he watched that Thunder music video probably like 6 times in a row. Just kept playing it over and over again, and but it is a good video. I don't blame him for that, and a good song. So I.
Yeah, so it's kind of a weird video, to be honest, but it's good.
Yeah, it's entertaining for sure. Speaking of Thunder, they didn't obviously make it to the conference finals, but they are a basketball team in the NBA, and we are going to jump into the NBA talk right now. Conference finals were epic. They were pretty epic. 2 game sevens. Obviously, Cavs beat Boston in Boston, and the Warriors beat the Rockets in Houston, so both the away teams won game 7. What are your thoughts on those 2 games? Let's start with Boston Cavs. No, well, actually, I don't want to start there because I know where you're going to go there with that. Let's start Rockets and Warriors.
the first thing I thought about when you said that was I got everything that I wanted out of both of those conference finals. Not that I wanted both of those teams to win, but that I wanted both of them to go 7 so bad.
Yeah, for sure.
And I was so worried that in the beginning, we talked about this last week. I was so worried at the beginning of the series that wasn't going to happen for me. And the long weekend with Sunday night and Monday night being game 7, I was just so jacked.
Oh, I know.
And I had so much fun watching both of those games. The one thing I will say is that I was disappointed in the play on both sides.
Yeah.
In both games. I thought that the Cavaliers game was just so hard to watch. It was just sloppy. And I totally understand, right, that in the playoffs, defense ramps up. Your nerves ramp up, adrenaline ramps up. And so you get those things, you get mistakes, you get crazy intense one-on-one defense you don't see anywhere else. And so it's harder for it to be a 130, 123 game. I get that. And then in the Rockets game.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to talk about everything all at once, but I was so excited at both of those game sevens, but both of them could have been played a little cleaner.
Right. Absolutely. And I think for both of those games, nobody wants to see that poor of shooting performance in a game 7, right? Like, I love the defensive intensity and the getting into each other and like the grabbing and the holding and all of that. But I don't necessarily like when a team scores 79 points in a game 7 or whatever it was. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't sit well. And then when the Celtics and the Rockets had very similar nights as far as starting hot and then going completely cold, and they both shot under 20% from 3. Like, that's ridiculous. And the Rockets had they missed 29 in a row, I believe, from beyond the arc, something crazy like that. So, I saw on one of the stat websites that's going 0 for 29 with the type of shots they had and the players that were shooting them. It was like 1 in 70,000 chance that would happen.
I feel like if you throw 20, I think it was 27.
27.
Because that's so much better.
Yeah.
I think if you were to throw me 27 balls, just like even diving right, diving left, like 2 of those fall.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's absolutely incredible. And I was watching it and I was sitting there talking to my wife and I was telling her, I was like, at any given time, Houston's going to catch fire. Like they have to.
Yeah.
That's the two things you think about that I always think about when it comes to sports, whatever sport it is when you miss a whole bunch of times, when you're in a slump, you're either in a slump until that slump's going to continue, or you take the optimistic viewpoint in that, well, no, they're due.
Right.
Like if you're 0 for 10 from the plate, you're due for a hit.
Right.
Because you can't go 0 for a million. It's impossible. If you're 0 for 26 from the 3-point line, you think, oh, I'm due to make this. And then they just kept missing and missing and missing. I kept thinking, why in the world are we not going to the rack?
Right.
Why are we not picking and rolling and taking the elbow jumpers?
Well,
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's
why are we
great.
not cutting back door and trying to get a layup? Like, why are we just sitting, continuing to jack up threes when it's not working? That was so confusing to me.
But it's crazy, right? Because it's like that's what they did all year. So do you really stray away from the thing that got you to a game seven in the conference finals? Like,
I'm not saying to stray away from it. I'm saying if you're James Harden, if you're any of those shooters, like I'm not a shooter, right? And I was talking to the shakiest gun in the West.
who is a shooter? Volume shooter.
Who is a shooter, right? He's a shooter. And that's one of the things that he was talking to me about. He's like, a shooter just wants to see the ball go in.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with a hitter in volleyball. You just want to bounce a couple to feel like you've got it, and then you're good.
Yeah.
You just want to hit a couple drives down the fairway, and then on that third drive, you're like, confidence, baby. It's the same thing. So go to the rack. Make a couple free throws, see that ball go in a couple times, then take a couple more threes. I'm not saying to just like abandon the game plan. I'm just saying do something to get your shooter some sort of confidence instead of just like ISO, ISO, ISO three,
Right.
ISO, ISO, ISO three, ISO, ISO three.
Yeah.
It was just like, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe there was no timeouts, no adjustments. It just seemed like they were just praying that they would figure it out.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I the same thing happened to Boston, unfortunately. They just went cold from everywhere. And you had, unfortunately, Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown, who had been studs throughout the series and even the playoffs, just fell apart. I mean, Terry Rozier was 0 for 10 from the field, I think. I think he only scored because he made a couple free throws. Jaylen Brown had like 8 points or something like that and shot terribly too. So when two of the guys that you've been relying on, regardless of their caliber of play, as far as Jaylen Brown only being a second year player and Terry Rozier being a backup point guard technically, that's not what they've done all season and all postseason. And so that was really unfortunate for the Celtics.
Terry Rozier went 0 for 10 and got a dunk blocked by LeBron.
He did get a dunk block by LeBron, and
That was so
LeBron
exciting.
stood at the other end of the court for about 3 minutes looking at him, which you don't like. You said that last week, that when Marcus Morris blocked whoever pushed him out of bounds, that you're not supposed to stare down a guy.
Don't like guys staring other guys down. Nah, I think it's lame.
Yeah, LeBron's lame.
No, on that same note, though,
But
the dunk that Jason Tatum had was
oh,
freaking awesome.
that was gonna be my next point. How
It was awesome.
sick was that?
I actually like Jason Tatum staring LeBron down because I think I just love that fire that he had in that moment. I didn't like what's his face that was next to him. Marquise Morris was like
Oh,
yelling
yeah.
at LeBron too, and I was like, "What did you do?
Yeah.
Why are you yelling?" And then also, I thought it was really cool that LeBron didn't even get fired up. He just said.
Yeah.
He just stood there and he's like, yeah, like that was awesome. And then at the end of the game, gave Jason Tatum like tons of love.
Yeah.
Like gave him like a 5-minute hug, was like, you're great. Like, I don't know. I think they probably heard like most of the stuff he said or whatever, but he's like, you're awesome. Like, this is gonna be your league one day, you're great, and just gave him tons of love, which I thought
Yeah.
was great because he like showed him up and like he didn't show him up, but Jason Tatum like dunked on him, yelled in his face, and
Right.
then LeBron just like took it with a grain of salt, and then at the end of the game was like, listen, like you're a stud, like you got this. I thought
Yeah.
that was a like super, super class act.
And so here I had two big takeaways from these games, one from each. One, the Warriors are very good, and it's going to be a very tough finals for the Cavs. But two, Jason Tatum is going to be next level talent. And for a rookie without the two best players on your team to step up the way he did, especially in a game seven, he had 24 points and he was the only guy that shot decent from the field. I think he was like 55% overall. And I just love the way he plays. I mean, he's crafty and he's athletic and he's got the smarts about him already. You can kind of tell he still had some rookie mistakes here and there, but the way he plays is fun to watch. And I think when you combine that next year, when you get Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward back, and he is now hopefully doing what he did this year with those two guys surrounding him, he's going to be a handful for a lot of teams for many years to come. And so that makes me very excited personally. But I don't know about
He's
the rest of the league.
rookie of the year.
I mean,
He's
if they
rookie of
counted
the
the
year.
playoffs, yeah, for sure.
If you redo it right now, like it's a landslide.
Right.
like playing the way he did against the competition he was against, you know, going against LeBron, going against playoff teams, and just taking his team where he had to be the best player this far. You can be as incredible as you want in the regular season. This trumps it all. So
Right.
I mean, you redo that vote right now. It's a landslide.
Right. So moving on to my second point, the Warriors are one of those teams that, despite not playing very well, they only need to play well for like 9 minutes out of the game and they just go bonkers. And then they're up by 15 points and then they've got you exactly where they want you. I don't know how they do it. The first half was so like up and down and just like didn't look good. They weren't playing well. Klay Thompson had three fouls in the first like 6 minutes of the game or something. And then all of a sudden that third quarter comes out and it's just like the most ridiculous thing. Steph gets hot. KD gets hot, defense picks up, combine that with Houston shooting terribly, and it's like they needed 9 minutes to separate themselves and go on to the finals. It was insane to watch.
I actually take the opposite. I have the opposite take watching the Western Conference Finals. I was not impressed by Golden State.
Really?
I thought that they were very hot and cold. I thought that they relied on the three way too much. I thought KD played way too much of a backseat when his jump shot, his two pointer, his like, you know, 10 to 18 foot jump shot is absolutely unstoppable because he's so long.
Yeah.
And I think that they win that series with Chris Paul. Chris Paul plays in that game, I think that's over. And then Golden State, their run or whatever, you know, might come to an end. So I don't think that they impressed me that much. I thought that they had a couple incredible quarters, but I think if Chris Paul plays, then you see Houston in the finals and everybody's singing a different tune. I think they got lucky, and I thought that they played complacent and cocky, and it just so happened that they got to a position where all they had to do was kind of show up for a quarter or two. Houston completely collapsed and choked.
Yeah.
We're all in agreement that that was the case. So I'm not sitting here saying that Golden State won it. I think Houston lost it.
Really?
Yep.
Fair enough. Hey, but that doesn't take away from what's going to happen next, which I think the Warriors are just going to obliterate the Cavs.
I know you think that.
I do, and they are. It's gonna happen.
Hey, Cavs have beaten the Warriors before in the finals.
They
Don't count
have,
them out.
but with much better talent.
And the Warriors had less talent.
Yeah. Fair enough. We'll see. We'll see. We're gonna see what happens. That's what's great about this. No, I mean, let's honestly talk about this. Nobody thought the Celtics would get as far as they did, right? I mean, they were gonna be out against Philly one round ago, and they beat them. Almost took Cavs to game seven. So anything can happen in the playoffs, but I just think that there's too much. And I think Golden State, going back to your point, I think they're due to have an actual good game, couple of good games instead of just good quarters. And when they have good games, they're unstoppable. There's no way.
You know,
I think what they need to do literally is you guard all four other guys on the court extremely tight, and you let LeBron go for 65, 70 points because you know that they're going to outscore that. You don't let anybody else score. Let LeBron get his 70, and then just outbeat him with points.
that's what I would do too.
Because they're not going to be able to stop the other four on the other side.
Why waste your energy trying to stop the best player on the planet? Just let him go nuts. And then
Right.
if everybody else has a hand in their face every time they take a shot, it's over.
Yeah.
I think you're right that I think at least two of the games in this finals will be like 25 point Golden State victories.
Yeah.
Like whether it goes four or six or, you know, crazy happens and it goes seven, at least two of these games, Golden State's going to get hot and it's going to be destruction. Like there might even be two games in this series that LeBron doesn't even play the fourth quarter.
Right.
Like that's very possible because, and I was watching the game, I was talking to Steph and I was like, the second that I saw Steph get hot from three in that game seven, and he hit a couple threes. And he did take one of those heat check shots where he just
Yeah.
dribbles up to like 6 feet down the 3 point line and just pops it. And then that thing falls nothing but net. I was like, oh
Yeah.
crap.
Yep.
It's like if he is feeling like that, where he starts to do his little shimmy,
Yep. I
I
know.
was like, you're such a freaking turd.
You hate Steph too.
He starts
You
to do
hate
it. And
Steph Curry.
I think he's overrated. Like I
Really?
know he's like, and I will sit here and tell you all day that he's the best shooter in the history of basketball. I think that he makes, you know, 28 footers look like free throws. It just he's so incredible from beyond the 3 point line, from jumpers, driving to the rack, like everything. He's a scoring monster. But I think he's overrated. I think he can't carry a team on his back. I think he relies too much on his shot. I think he has bad body language, which I'm not a fan of. He chews his mouthpiece. I don't know. It's just like some things about him that just rung me the wrong way. I'm not a big KD fan either.
I know. You don't like, that's why you don't like the Warriors, because you literally hate their two best players. So why would you ever want them to win?
I don't hate them. So my thing with KD is, just let me get it out since we're on it, right? Was I loved him in the beginning when he was with the Thunder.
Yeah.
I loved him and Russ. I thought they were awesome. I thought that he changed a lot since he went to Golden State, and he was like, he's barking at the media all the time.
Yeah.
And he's whining about this and whining about that. And people are on his case, and I think he started to play kind of a villain role,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't like that. He doesn't like being the villain. He wants to be the hero.
Yeah.
And so he started being kind of snappy, and that rubbed me the wrong way. So that's why I'm not the big KD fan at the moment.
Fair. But to rebuttal your point, Steph Curry did win a championship without KD. When he was by far the best player.
Well, see, because he did not win MVP. Oh.
Well, Andre Iguodala did.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He let a person, somebody off the bench, outshine him in the NBA Finals. Would Kobe ever let that happen? Would LeBron ever let that? Would KD even let that happen? No.
That's a good point. But I mean, like I said last week, I think that Steph Curry is really only good when he's making shots. Everywhere else, he's a liability for the most part. If he's not sinking three-pointers, he's hurting you on defense, and he's not like a true point guard where he's getting in the lane trying to create for other people. So
yeah,
I don't disagree with you 100%.
He's very one-dimensional.
Right.
And in that one dimension, he's... Maybe the best to ever do it.
Ray Allen is the best to ever do it. Let's be real. Especially when he was on the Celtics.
Steph Curry is going to blow every single record Ray Allen has to smithereens.
Simply because of volume. Volume. Yes, he's going to shoot probably 2,000 more three-pointers over his career than Ray Allen did.
But why didn't Ray Allen shoot more threes?
Because that wasn't the game back then.
Oh, now it's a generational argument.
Yes, absolutely. Ray Allen was a better athlete, better defender. He could take it. He could take it to the rim. He could dunk it. He was a better basketball player.
Agreed.
And shooter.
I'm just talking about shooting.
Absolutely.
Pure shooting.
You should love him. He's the one that saved LeBron's ass when he hit that corner three against the Spurs with time running out to go to overtime.
Yeah, that was great. I just think Steph makes difficult shots look so stinking easy.
Yeah.
And the fact that the only reason you don't take more shots as a shooter is because they're not good shots.
Right.
And because he makes bad shots look so easy, he can take more shots because he still shoots them at like a 45% clip.
That's a good point. It's fair. So what's your prediction? You already know mine. I already have the bet on the line. Warriors in five.
I say six.
Okay.
Warriors in six. I think that Cleveland steals two home games. For what I saw from the Western Conference Finals, Golden State can get really sloppy.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can rely on the three, and then all of a sudden they, you know, one of the things that I think is an issue for them that I think most teams would love to have as an issue is they have so many great shooters and superstars that some people tend to like defer, and they don't know when to step up and be that guy. Whereas like Cleveland never has that problem.
Right.
Right. And they're like, oh, LeBron's a guy and everybody else just plays a role. Well, Golden State doesn't have that dynamic. It's different. It's KD says, oh, no, Steph, you're hot. You go. And then Steph's like, no, KD, you go. And they're like, oh, we got to get Clay involved. Oh, what about Draymond? Oh, snap. And then all of a sudden, like, everybody's deferring and nobody's really taking lead. And then they realize that none of them have taken enough shots to get into rhythm.
Right.
And I feel like I saw that two or three times. And then Houston capitalized, and that's why they stole some games off them. And I think Cleveland could just do that a couple times. All it takes is J.R. Smith and Kevin Love and these guys to just get hot from three, and they can steal two games at home.
That's fair.
And I have a bet on the line, so I have to stick to
it. It's crazy to think that we made that bet so long ago, and it's now coming to fruition where we're going to actually have to see what happens.
Well, thinking of bets, right? We split on our predictions.
We did. Yeah, I know. We were in. We both
went seven. So really, we were both almost 100% right.
Absolutely. The last point I wanted to bring up, this is a Pac-12 podcast, so I wanted to talk a little bit about former UCLA Bruin Kevin Love. I looked at the stats, and I know you hate him, but before he got hurt, you can't count game six because he only played 4 minutes, but he had four rebounds. But so he was averaging basically 48 rebounds for that game. But for
So, before he got hurt, in the conference finals, he was averaging 15 and 11. I'm going to give you two guesses at how many other players between both conference finals average a triple or double-double.
In this conference finals?
In this conference finals. So Rockets, Warriors, Cleveland, Celtics. How many other players average a double-double in the conference finals?
Four.
Wrong.
How many?
One. Clint Capella was the only other player to average a double-double. He was just over 10 points and 10 rebounds.
How much does Clint Capella make a year?
A lot of money. He's about to make a lot of money.
He's about to. And I bet he lives up to his contract.
Yeah, Kevin Love is... He's one of two players to average a double-double in the conference finals.
Cleveland, they showed a stat. I don't remember the exact numbers. Cleveland was like plus 21 when Kevin Love was on the bench. And they were like minus 18 when Kevin Love was on the floor.
Not true.
Cleveland is... That is true.
They won two games and lost two games, but he played. No, they won three. They won. No, they lost three.
They lost three. He does not live up to his expectations. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just saying.
I'm not saying that he's not decent. I'm not saying that he's not a starter. I'm not saying that he's not like, you know, the second or third best player on our team, whatever it is. I just feel like the expectations were a lot higher for him, and he's really never lived up to the billing.
Fair. My counter argument to that is that if he lives up to the billing, you're not sitting here saying how LeBron had to do this all on his own. So your narrative is greatly hindered if Kevin Love plays a lot better, which I don't think you actually want, because I think you want to be able to say that LeBron is the best ever and he led this team by himself. So it's a lose-lose for you, my friend.
if Kevin Love goes like 22-12, like his contract says he's supposed to, LeBron is still carrying the team on his back, averaging like 37 flipping points a game and almost a triple-double. Just because somebody is a remotely decent number two on a team doesn't mean that LeBron's not carrying the team on his back.
I'm just saying, you've called him a bum numerous times on this podcast before, and to be one of two players to average a double-double in the conference finals kind of says you're not a bum. KD didn't do it. Steph didn't do it. Even Draymond Green didn't do it. LeBron didn't even do it. LeBron didn't even average a double-double. Granted, he was like 34... 9-7 or something like that, so he was pretty damn close. But but he didn't average a double-double.
touche. I'll give you that one.
Anywho. This is a Pac-12 podcast, like I said, so let's do a little Pac-12 update quickly. In women's softball, Pac-12 went 3-0 on Saturday's Super Regional action, securing three more spots for the conference in the Women's College World Series. Washington, Oregon, and Arizona State joined UCLA as four of the eight teams moving on in the hunt for a national title. This is the first time since 2006 that the Pac-12 has sent four teams. So basically they have four of the final eight teams in the Women's College World Series. The way the World Series works, it's like I said, two brackets, four teams each, double elimination in each bracket, and then whoever is the winner of the brackets moves on to the finals, where it's a best of three elimination series. Unfortunately, Oregon, Arizona State, and Washington are all in the same bracket. It's basically a Pac-12 conference melee, and you just throw Oklahoma in there. That's that side. And UCLA is on the other side with Florida, Florida State, and Georgia. Pretty impressive to have four of the final eight teams in the College World Series from the Pac-12.
Yeah, I'm not a historian, actually. I have a bachelor's degree in history. But I am not a historian on Pac-12 softball. Is Pac-12 a traditional powerhouse in softball?
Traditionally,
or is this a recent thing?
Traditionally, they always have a couple teams. I'd say one or two. I know Arizona was good back in the day when we were going to college, and UCLA is always pretty good. But this is the first time since 2006 that we've sent four teams. So, I don't know. Take that for what you will, but...
Better than most?
And the only other, it looks like the SEC is really the only other conference that is really good. And the ACC,
I
guess.
The SEC.
Yeah. So Pac-12 kicking ass, taking names in softball per usual. Similar though for baseball, Stanford won the Pac-12 regular season baseball title. They finished 22-8. Oregon State came in second with 29-1 record, followed by Washington and UCLA. All four of those teams have also made it to the regionals of the College World Series, so their playoffs are just starting this weekend, actually. So we'll have an update as far as how that goes moving forward. But you know, baseball and softball looking good. I think Oregon State and Stanford have real good shots of making it, making deep pushes into the playoffs. So we'll see.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, that wraps up anything, unless you have anything to add, Kyle. I don't know if you, or do you want to just jump right into the Blitz package?
Let's do the Blitz package. Okay. I got three if you got three.
Okay. I can do that. I'll start with one, and then I'll come up with, I got two, so I'll come up with another one. So big story as of this morning, the Philadelphia 76ers have launched an independent investigation into the alleged Twitter habits of President of Basketball Operations Brian Colangelo, after a report surfaced detailing that he has multiple anonymous accounts to support his own work and to take shots at other players. Apparently, he had 5 burner accounts that he was using to leak information, talk trash about players and refs, and defend moves made by the organization. When do you think he'll get fired?
It's not fired already?
Not yet. They're doing an investigation. But he came out and said that he uses one other one, but the other 4, he's not sure whose they are.
So the first thing I thought of was, why?
That's what I thought too.
That seems like so much work. I get being defensive and wanting to, you know, put the word out there, and, you know, our president, for God's sakes, just can't handle somebody saying a certain thing without responding. That's a common thing, but I mean, that is a lot of work.
A lot of work
to go through that, and then to cover everything up and make sure that it's anonymous and all these things. Like,
it's crazy.
That's something else. Something else going on to fuel the need to do all those things.
It's like Tristan Thompson trying to juggle 2 girlfriends. It just doesn't ever work out for you. You're going to get caught eventually.
Yeah, it's like not paying taxes.
But yeah, but my real question was, how do you think social media has impacted the sports world with all the increases in Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook and all that? Not only players and organizations, but also fans.
No, I'd say it's everything. I mean, it's all the data anybody could ever want and all the information anybody could ever want at your fingertips 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it from a pros and cons perspective, it's so dangerous. And from a liability perspective, I know that these organizations and these franchises are just shaking at the knees, because at any given time, a video of somebody, a tweet of somebody, a snap of somebody, anybody, anywhere, I mean, with the high definition cameras everybody has on all their phones, mm-hmm. it's like anything that anybody does can be captured and saved and then spread to the world in seconds. And at the same time, everybody's knee-jerk reactions to anything that's going on can be displayed to the world in seconds. Right. And both of those things are extremely dangerous. So if you look at it from marketing and exposure and a lot of the things that these organizations love, it's a huge positive because you can get any message you want out there instantly. But I think it's more of a negative because everybody's vulnerable all of the time.
Yeah. I 100% agree. I think for all the pluses that it has, as far as running a business with a lot of young kids basically that are out there trying to promote themselves as well. And I think it can cause a lot of trouble. I mean, KD got in trouble for having a burner account, talking trash about Russell Westbrook. I mean, this isn't the first person that it's happened to, but I think that it's similar in that these people put value in how good they are at their sport or how good they are at running a team. And when they get a lot of heat and criticism because everybody has a voice on these social media things, they feel the need to protect themselves. And you can't do it from your own personal account, because then you're looked down upon and said, hey, you should just take the high road. You know, you blah, 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 blah. You make millions, you're in the NBA. It shouldn't matter to you what these people on Twitter say. But there is the human nature that you want to defend yourself, and a lot of these people get in trouble and they eventually get caught.
It's interesting because I always think about the generations and how they're different because of the technology and the social media and everything we have, right? Like, a couple things about some of the players these days that somehow stay out of the limelight, which is so impressive because of all the information that's out there. Like a Kawhi Leonard. Yeah. Like, before all the stuff was going down with the Spurs, he played like 6 years in the NBA with being like one of the top 5 players in the league and was never anywhere. Mm-hmm. He was never on Twitter. He was never on social media. He was never getting in trouble. He was never anything. He somehow found a way to like live in a black hole.
Right.
Which is so impressive. And then if you think about the guys in the 80s and 90s, like MJ, for example, if a major news outlet didn't write something about him, nobody knew anything.
Right.
Like nobody, unless you brought your, we didn't even have digital cameras.
Right.
Like unless you brought a flipping Polaroid or a disposable camera to a theme park and snapped a photo and then slid that little bar to the right to get to the next one. and then went and got your, you know, 1 hour photo and you got the thing back and then you send it to somebody that they put on, like, yeah. Holy crap. It took so much work to get something out there. Like how different would it be for those guys, you know, from Wilt to MJ? How much different would their careers be if they had that exposure?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. So pluses and minuses. It was pretty funny though. Joel Embiid tweeted at one of the burner accounts because so the reason it's a big deal too is because he actually talked a lot of trash on Joel Embiid and saying that he had a huge ego and he was hard to work with and blah blah blah, all this other stuff. So Joel Embiid retweeted at that one saying that Hinkie, who's I think the owner, is much better than this the guy that had all the burner accounts. So he was talking trash to one of the burner accounts. So it's pretty funny. But Joel Embiid, same thing, right? Like he's basically talking trash to the operations manager of the organization through social media.
Joel Embiid has strategically placed awesome social media information out there. Like he has done a fantastic job at putting himself in a perfect position to be a superstar.
Yep. And he's, like, yeah, because he was the one that pushed the trust the process stuff pretty hard. Like that was him always saying that and always doing that. Yeah. So
he put a lot of eggs in obviously his basket, his abilities to perform, and he did. So it makes him look really good because he's being like, well, I'm the next thing. I'm the thing. I'm the awesome. I'm the thing. I'm like, I'm the man. And then he is the man. So
right,
it's awesome. If he, you know, if he ended up being like, you know, Markel Fultz, he could look like an idiot, but he's not. So,
all right, fair enough. All right, go ahead. What's yours?
My first one. So, listen to one of my few golf podcasts that I listened to, and they were going over a challenge that the USGA hosts every year at a US Open course. And so this year, the US Open is at Shinnecock,
okay,
which is in upstate New York. And they host an unlimited mulligans challenge.
Oh.
And so they invite a bunch of golfers out there for a golf tournament like you and I play in, right? 80 golfers, whatever it is. And you get unlimited mulligans. There's no limit on mulligans. You just have to finish the round in 5 hours and 15 minutes.
Wow.
And low score wins. So if you want to hit the first tee shot 42 times and then hit the rest of them three, you can do that. If you feel like you missed a shot and so one of the guys that won it was actually host of one of the podcasts I was listening to, and he's talking about it, and he missed a 14-foot putt 32 times. And he had to pick up and go to the next hole because he couldn't do it. And the guys behind him were like throwing their hands up. They were like, dude, you're taking forever. Like, what's going on? But I just thought about that. I was like, that, I can't think of anything more fun than doing that.
No, that, is, do you have a question or is that just a statement?
No, so my question to you is, how many mulligans would it take? So some more information is they played from the tips at the US Open setup.
So it's long.
So 510-yard par fours with crazy narrow fairways, 650-yard par fives, like wind, like greens rolling at 14, like everything that you could imagine. It's gnarly, right? So how many mulligans would you need? How many mulligans could you take if you still had to play in 5 hours and 15 minutes?
Oh, man. Well, I would need a lot playing from the tips. I think I would need probably three or four every hole.
I mean, would you be hitting 3 wood into these greens?
Well, not if it's 510-yard par four. Depends, is it downhill? Is there a wind behind my back?
I mean, like you there's some par fours we can't even get there in two. Like, let's be real.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah, that's a good point. Crazy. But what I will say, I feel like I could save some mulligans like 100 yards and in because I've got a pretty decent short game. So
true that.
I feel like I would be retaking a lot of shots off the tee and my second approach, or if it's a layup or whatever it is. I feel like that's where I would be taking a lot more to see if I can get it 10, 15 yards closer, or can I get it more at a better angle into the green or whatever. But I don't know. I would need a lot for sure.
It's not a great question. I just wanted to bring it up because it's fantastic. I just thought it'd be so much fun.
They're timing you then, right? When you hit it off the tee?
Each group plays with a USGA official.
Oh, okay.
And everybody has a caddy. So it's legit.
Oh, wow. That's a real deal.
Your caddy's carrying your bag. Like, you get the whole thing. The official's like making sure you don't break the rules. Like, it's the real deal.
Okay. Dang. That would be a lot of fun.
So much fun. I think that some fundraiser golf tournament should do that.
Yeah.
And instead of everybody play their own ball, but you can eliminate mulligans or even like a team game. Like, hey, it's a 4-man scramble and you get, you know, unlimited mulligans, but you got to finish in 4.5 hours.
Yeah, that would be cool.
So like freaking get your butt out there and go because you can't dick around forever.
Yeah.
But if you want to, you know, take the same putt 12 times, you're more than welcome to.
You know, I love best ball situations. I love those setups.
It's so much fun.
Especially the 2-man one because it's like, or 4-man too, but there's so much less pressure. You just need one person to have a good shot between the four of you, and you feel good. You know, like you feel like you can get up and you can take a shot when you're 240, 250 out and try and get it on the green because someone else is going to either lay up or they're going to try and get just as close as you are. So I think the stress is reduced and the fun factor is increased when you do
best ball. I love it. Best ball. I absolutely love scrambles.
Absolutely. All right. Well, the National Spelling Bee is upon us. I don't know if you know this, but every spring, hundreds of middle school students cram into a hotel ballroom and attempt to spell very obscure words that no one knows if they're actually real or not. But more than 1 million people tuned in to watch the Scripps National Spelling Bee on ESPN last year. Apparently, the demographic for watching kids spell weird words is actually pretty high. But what I love about the National Spelling Bee is that the nerds get their moment to be the stars, to be the heroes. And so I am going to give you your moment to be a nerd and have your... I'm going to give you the last 5 winning words and see if you can spell.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man. You're a historian. You should know where all of these words are derived from. Okay. So I don't even know how to pronounce most of these words, just as... But I do have...
If you can't pronounce it right now, the heck am I supposed to spell it?
That's a good question, but this is going to be a lot of fun. I do have the definition and the language of origin, though, so you can ask for those if that makes any difference.
Yeah, because that's super helpful.
So the 2017 championship word was Marocaine.
Marocaine.
Oh, wait. Before you answer, I also have this. Or this.
Marocaine. Marrocane.
Incorrect. Marocaine. Marocain. It's French derivative, a dress fabric of ribbed crepe made of silk or wool or both.
I was going with the bone marrow.
Yeah. Marrow. That's okay. The 2016 national championship word was Jezelshaft. Oh my gosh. I should have also done real or fake for this because that would have been freaking hilarious. But they're all real. They're all real. I promise.
Where do you even?
It's okay. I'll give you. It's German. Language of origin is German, and it's an association of individuals for common goals, as for entertainment, intellectual or cultural purposes, or for business reasons. In other words, a society.
G.
That's a good start.
E. S-I-L-S-H-A-F-T.
Not bad, but incorrect. G-E-S-E-L-L-S-C-H-A-F-T.
C-H, that's German. Yeah. Gosh, dang it. I should have known that.
So, this one is my favorite of all of them coming up. This is the 2015 National Championship word. It is Scherenschneid, also of German.
I was going to say. Yeah. Say it one more time.
Scherenschneid. I hope I'm saying that right.
Because that matters.
Yeah, you're right. We should get our German expert, Pat Carney, back on. He can tell us if I said it correctly or not.
Sharon Schneit. S-H-E-R-A-N-S-C-H-N-E-I-G-H-T.
Oh, man. I mean, you're sounding it out. You're doing it how it might sound, but it's S... Oh, hold on. S-C-H-E-R-E-N-S-C-H-N-I-T-T-E. Sharon Schneit.
Wow.
Yeah.
T-T-E?
Remember that middle schoolers are getting this right, not to make you feel any worse about yourself, but...
They're not guessing, first of all. They've seen these words before. They just, like, learn how to spell every word that there has ever been. That's how they win.
Okay. The 2014 championship word was stichomythia.
Stichomythia. S-T-I-C-K-O-M-I-T-H-I-A.
S-T-I-C-H-O-M-Y-T-H-I-A. Greek origin, yeah. And it means dialogue in which two characters speak alternate lines of verse used as a stylistic device in ancient Greek drama. Just in case you're wondering.
Can't wait to use that with my buddies.
The last word, 2013 championship word, natal. It is Yiddish, a type of dumpling eaten especially in Jewish households during Passover. Yiddish.
K-N-A-D-A-L.
Oh, gosh. You're on the right track, though. K-N-A-I-D-E-L. See, that's what they do to you. They
I
make
got the K, though. I'm stuck on.
I'll give you half credit for that because you got the K. But I was looking at the words that these kids spell, and it's insane. Like, I don't – and the funny thing is, like, they'll – like, I've watched it before because I actually am entertained by it. But the person will say the word, and, like, being kind of snotty, they'll be like, oh, that's German, right? Can you give me the definition? Like, they know already what its origin is. Okay. Jeez.
Well, you say, like, Schneider Schneiken.
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty usual.
I think that's German. Well, what's actually interesting to me is that, because I've watched it before, is the kids are entertaining themselves because they're all tweens.
True, yeah.
So they're all, like, in between kids and teenagers. Like, some have gone through puberty, some haven't.
Yeah.
Some are going through puberty as they're spelling words. So it makes it, like, really entertaining. Some of them are comfortable and nervous and sweaty, and it's just
a
whole package.
Do you think that they hit on each other and try and be like funny by like using the words that they were given? Like,
of a kid, of course they do.
A kid could say like, "Hey, I'll show you my Jezel shaft." All right. Oh man,
that's a good line.
That's a good line.
Yeah,
that's a great line.
Like, and I can spell it.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Oh, that's terrible. Anywho, that was the end of that for me. So what's your next one?
So I've been following the Pac-12 football predictions for 2018.
Okay.
Interesting because, you know, both LA teams don't really know who's going to play quarterback. And so this prediction has, I think, what most people would expect. But I just want to hear your take on who you think is going to be top two in the North, who you think should be top two in the South, who's going to win the Pac-12.
Okay. So I think the North is a little bit more straightforward. I think the top two will be Washington and Stanford. No real big surprises there. I feel like they both have a lot of guys coming back. Quarterbacks are both coming back. Running backs are both coming back. Defenses are, you know, mostly coming back. But they always seem to reload too. And so I think those two from the North. My sleeper in the North, though, is Oregon. They're getting their quarterback back. Who, when he was playing, they're averaging like 500 yards a game and like 35 points or something like that. And then when he was out, they were 0-for and averaging much less. So Oregon's my sleeper, but top two in the North, Washington and Stanford. Top two in the South, I feel like is tough, but You can't go against USC. You just can't. I know they're kind of up in the air about the quarterback situation, but they always just seem to get most of the talent in LA and surrounding areas, and even from around the country. They have a lot of guys coming from out of state. So I think they'll figure out the quarterback situation. My guess is they'll just give it to the freshman. I think they're going to start him right away and just ride him for 3 years. TJ Daniels, the kid from Modern Day.
Interesting.
That's my thing is you don't
– JT.
JT, sorry. Justin Timberlake in sync. You're right. Anyways, you don't have a kid come early like that, graduate early and show up early, and I think not use him right away when he has the talent, apparently, from the Elite 11 camps and playing and all of that. Like, so that's my guess. I think he'll play rotationally the first couple of games, and then by game three or four, he'll be the guy. That's my big prediction. So USC number one, and I'm going to go Arizona number two. They're bringing Khalil Tate back. They had like three or four freshman defensive players on All Pac-12, and their freshman running back set like the Arizona or close to the Arizona record for most yards in a season by a rookie. So my top two in the South are USC and Arizona. I think the North wins it this year, and I'm gonna go Stanford wins it all. I hate to do it, but I think with Bryce Love coming back, a Heisman, I mean, as long as he stays healthy, if he has any of the production that he had last year, but they're bringing Costello, the quarterback, back, and JJ Arcega-Whiteside, or whatever his last name is, the wide receiver. So, like, their main offensive weapons are all back. And with Schott at the helm, he just does good every year. So that's who I'm going with.
Solid. I think that's what most people think. I agree with you about the North. I think Washington and Stanford are probably the two powerhouses in the Pac-12, with USC having a brand new quarterback coming out this year. We don't know how that's going to end up. So I agree with you there. I think it's probably going to be one of those two. I would like to say that Stanford wins the North. I just think that, like you said, Coach Shaw is incredible. They always just run downhill and they play great defense. And they pound the football and they're so hard to stop. But then again, Washington has all their offensive weapons coming back, and they were great last year. I felt that Stanford stepped up when they needed to last year and won games, and Washington kind of wilted a little bit.
Yeah, under for pressure. Sure.
So that might make me think Stanford wins the North. The South, as it has been in the last couple of years, is obviously the weaker of the two conferences, at least on the top side. The South is traditionally deeper,
right?
But not as top heavy as the North is. I don't think that JT Daniels gets the start, only because he can't join the team until the fall. So he doesn't have the practice reps that Fink and the other quarterback are going to have. So I think that Matt Fink or Jack Sears are the two guys that end up getting the start. Probably Fink, because he's a dual threat quarterback. And I think USC kind of needs that right now because their offensive line's a little bit suspect or a little bit younger. I still think USC wins the South. But if I had to bet my 401k on it, I think that the North ends up beating them in the Pac-12 championship game, which sucks. This prediction has Utah number two,
ooh,
and then Arizona number three.
Okay.
I think they could go either way. Utah just plays really hard at home, so it's hard to beat, you know, that team in Utah. One thing I thought was very interesting is that Arizona State is predicted sixth in the South.
No way.
So much hoopla around Herm Edwards and everything that's going on. Can you hear that?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. There's so much hoopla. I'm hearing an echo.
Are you?
Yeah, you're going to have to.
Wow, we just had some minor technical difficulties. Kyle sounded like he was trying to mask his voice on one of those murder shows. But we're back. So Kyle, you were saying there's a lot of hoopla around Herm Edwards.
There is a lot of hoopla around Herm Edwards and Arizona State. And I think it's hilarious that they're projected to be last in the South and probably last, maybe last in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And I just think that...
No, there's no way they're worse than Oregon State. Oregon State only beat Portland State last year. That's
what's
it.
What's their prediction? 7-6?
Oregon last State? Year?
Arizona State went 7-6 last year.
Oh, so, yeah.
I think you're right. I think the top, the worst, the bad teams in the North are worse.
Right.
But if Arizona State gets last, that's really funny because to have a big name coach like that and to just completely fall apart in your first season, even though they're not your recruits.
Yeah.
That ain't a good look.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm pretty interested. It's just talking about football right now gets me so jacked for like the next month and a half to go by because I cannot wait to start getting into some football stuff.
They're less than 100 days from kickoff.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yep.
That is freaking awesome. You know what is also awesome? That there's a lot of hoopla around. Oh, that was so great.
My favorite word after that audio glitch.
Oh, that's so great. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I have a third one for you that is not sports related at all, but I had a fantastic breakfast burrito this morning. And I just want to know, what is your ideal breakfast burrito?
Ooh, ideal breakfast burrito. Man, you know, I don't normally order breakfast burritos.
Really?
Like if I were to go to a restaurant, like a gourmet breakfast restaurant, I would get something else.
Okay.
And I'm a big ham and cheese croissant guy. I'm a big breakfast sandwich guy, like two pieces of sourdough, egg, bacon, sausage, whatever it is, like just like a sandwich.
Okay.
But if I were to go breakfast burrito, I'd probably either go like chorizo and egg.
Mm.
Or probably like a sausage and egg burrito. Okay. But you pack everything in there, man.
Yeah, and it's gotta be like diced up and cut up nicely so you get a little bit of everything in each bite. I hate when you like get a burrito and it's like you see like the egg layer and the meat layer and the cheese layer and it's like, okay, but when I take a bite at this angle I only get cheese. That does me no good. That does me no good.
What about potatoes or hash browns? How do you feel about that?
I'm in hash browns for sure. You gotta get the crunchy.
Can it be too potato heavy though? Because I've had breakfast burritos where like if half of the bites are just solid potato, like that's a lot of starch.
Yeah, it's a good call. Because then you get the tortilla and the potato. That's like a starch sandwich.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so it needs to be the right distribution for sure. But my ideal breakfast burrito is eggs, hash browns for the crunch, bacon and sausage, cheese, and then avocado.
Salsa?
No salsa. Not for me. I'm a ketchup guy.
No.
I can't do the salsa.
Dude, you have to put hot sauce or salsa on a breakfast burrito.
Do you have to?
Yes. Eggs and something spicy are such an incredible combo. It's out of this world. And I know you're not a spicy guy.
I'm not a spicy guy at all. I'm getting better, but I'm not at all.
I mean, have you tried it with like a, you know, crazy mild, like a super mild, you know, salsa that's approved for like third graders?
I actually had some salsa on my breakfast burrito this morning that was very mild, and it was good. I will admit it was very good, but I usually get the most mild salsa you can get, which is ketchup.
tomato paste. Yeah.
Oh, man. But, yeah, you know, the other spiciest food that I've ever had is that, those natals at Passover. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, natals.
Oh, anywho. All right. What's your third one?
I have a few, and I'm going to save this other one for later because it's going to be a better post-NBA conversation.
Okay.
But I watched Jello.
Oh, yeah.
Do some of his routine at the Lakers practice facility.
Very short stint in the Pac-12 at UCLA.
Yeah, seriously. It just got me thinking about he looked a little more impressive than I thought he would. A little more athletic than I thought he would. Now, does athleticism translate to the NBA? Sometimes. Not all the time. He's undersized, and I've always been of the opinion that he's just not going to hack it. But in your opinion, does he have a chance to make the NBA somewhere? Will somebody give him a shot? And then is he underrated because of all the hoopla around him?
I think so. Here's my thing. To answer your first question, I think that he will get a shot because I think I don't think he'll get drafted. I don't think he'll get drafted in the first two rounds of the draft. But I think he'll get picked up for somebody's G League team, and I don't know how good he is compared to those guys. He didn't play a whole lot at UCLA, but from what I remember them talking about him, he wasn't really up to par yet at UCLA. And you got to imagine that a guy that didn't actually have to play defense at all in high school because they just ran a half court 2-3 trap, and then he just leaked out. Like, he didn't ever have to actually guard anybody. That would maybe be the biggest concern for him moving forward. I think, like any of the Ball brothers, he's got probably great basketball IQ, and he's, like you said, he's athletic. He can shoot. He can get up and dunk it. But I think Lonzo is the best of the three, and I think that the next two are far below because they're not as tall, not as lanky, and not as just overall great basketball players compared to him. But I do think that at some point somebody will give him a shot just because of all the hoopla around him.
I hope he gets a shot, even, you know, just in spite of his dad.
Yeah.
Right. Regardless of how his dad's acting and everything, it's all that nonsense that he creates. I think somebody just give him a shot to make a team and you know, make a, you know, be part of that, you know, 12 or 14 man roster, whatever it is these days. And I don't think he'll get there, but you never know. I think he lost a big opportunity in not, you know, staying at UCLA and just giving that a shot and getting an education, a free education and all that. I think that was just complete disaster.
Yeah.
I don't know why everybody's like, some people are defending, you know, his move overseas and him coming back and all this stuff. And that just blows my mind.
Yeah. I mean, well, and that's the problem too, right? Is he played in like one of the lower divisions in Lithuania, and he wasn't a standout star either. And so Lithuania isn't like one of the better basketball countries in Europe either, you know? So like there's concerning things that came out of that as well. And I know that LeVar is blaming the coach and the organization and everything else other than maybe his son's talent, but there are some red flags as far as his actual ability goes too, if he couldn't even necessarily be standout there.
Agreed.
Agree to agree. Well, that's it. That's all we got. We made it through. We made it through a spelling bee. We made it through you concealing your voice to make sure no one knew who you were. So, this has been a lot of fun. This has been a good one.
Oh my gosh, how did that happen?
We're gonna look back and this is gonna be our best podcast ever. We should figure out how that happened and we should do a full podcast with our voices.
Like that. Yeah, you hit like conceal my identity settings in front of you at your little, you know, technology board.
Exactly. The drop down menu on Audacity gave me that option. I said, I'll take it.
Yeah. You're just messing with me.
Yeah, right at the right time too when you decided to drop the word hoopla too, which was the best. Oh man. All right. Well, this has been good. Kyle, thank you very much. We'll do the same damn thing next week.
All right, brother. Thank you.
All right, see ya. Just a young gun with the quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my own life behind. Not a yes, sir, not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder. Thunder.